Deshaun, that's an interesting hairdo. He's Tom been blessed.
But you gave Tom a reason. Oh, he's real black nigga now.
Right, exactly. You know what
I'm saying? Tom wasn't feeling that.
I'm going to wear a durag. Remember, I'm going to wear a durag. I guarantee.
To wear.
So I work at Enercare. I'm going to pull up. I'm going to wear a durag. Guarantee they're going to be, hey, man, is everything
you
all right?
You and your employer don't have that relationship.
We do, bro. I'll tell you, we actually do. Cause my boss used to be my partner.
Oh, okay.
Right? So one time he raised his voice at me. I raised my voice back. He was shocked. He's like, I'm a boss now. You know what I mean? But I'm gonna wear it and I'm gonna record it and I'm gonna show you guys. Bro.
Get the Ray-Bans with the camera.
Yeah. Bro, there's no way I'm telling you this. They're gonna accept it. There's like 4 black people in our company. And I'm gonna pull up with a durag. It's Rob. You thinking about changing careers?
That's why I said it depends.
Every man has to do it. You just gotta go to work and what?
Now we have a dress code still. They're not letting me work. Yeah.
Depends, right?
Listen, make some social contact.
Is it the only thing that's allowed on your hat?
Make some contact with a durag on. You're gonna see a bunch of unlikes on your stuff. Yep, we knew it. We knew it.
It's a matter of time.
Oh my goodness.
Oh man. Welcome back to another episode of He's a Guy Podcast. Hey, yo, have you guys subscribed yet? I think you guys should. There's a button there for you guys. It's red. There you go. Subscribe.
The hey, yo question went hard. Interrupted yourself.
I had to look over and say, well, what is it?
You guys subscribe yet? You need to be, please. You know, it will help out the channel for sure. And let us know, like, comment, subscribe again, please. And let us know what you guys would like us to talk about, if there's anything that you guys would find interesting. In this episode, we have a really, really, really special guest for you guys. We'll get that going with Deon to introduce himself. Go ahead, brother. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, obviously. It's Deon. Honestly, I'm feeling good lately. Changed my eating regimen. I feel healthier. I feel energetic. Starting to see some change. I'm feeling good, bro.
That's my man. Me, myself, I went snowboarding yesterday.
Okay.
How you feeling?
I'm moshing.
You look good out there, though. I did not expect that.
Because I learned fast. You know why? I researched.
I was watching YouTube videos before.
Brother,
you have to.
11 p.m. the night before up until 8 a.m. the next morning. My girl's like, yo, what are you doing? I'm like, yo, I'm trying to be the best. Like, I need to do this. So, yeah, I researched. Couple falls, of course, but yeah, I learned quick. And then a white dude on the way up on the ski lift was like, I'm like, yo, he's like, your first time? I said, yeah. He's like, okay, I see you out there. Just be confident. And when I heard that, I was like, don't tell me be confident. Like, I took it as a chip on my shoulder type of thing. And I went out there and I was confident. Like, instead of just trying to, bail out fall, they tell you to to overcome that. It's a mental barrier for you to be like, yo, you don't have to fall here. Stay on your feet type of thing. Actually worked out, to be honest. To my right, how are you, brother?
Good. Thank you guys for having me on here today, man.
No problem, brother. Please introduce yourself.
West Hype, which camera is West Hype's camera?
West Hype.
West Hype, professional risk taker, serial entrepreneur, management or representation to your favorite Caribbean comedians.
I like that. You rehearsed that?
No.
It sounds like you're like, I'm gonna show these guys a real intro. Yeah. I gotta go after that.
Unfortunately.
Well, you got Terrell Jimmy here, and that's about it. Tashawn.
Right. Hey boy, Tashawn, I'm back. I've been feeling a little bit tired lately, you know what I'm saying? Came back into the new year being like, I'm gonna do everything. And it kinda tired me out. But I'm just glad to be here with you guys, man. This is the bright spot. There's a bright spot in my week. Mm-hmm. It's definitely this.
It's just circled on your calendar, eh?
Circled, brother.
Every week still for
100%.
I hear that. Today, our topic is bouncing back from setbacks. Diving right in, actually, Wes, you touched on the professional risk taker. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want you to describe that immediately, because mm-hmm. I do want to actually find out, who you are, what you've done, to get to this point, of course, but that is such an interesting title.
You know what I mean? Because you don't see that a lot. You don't hear that a lot.
Yeah.
Especially putting the professional in front of it. Like, a lot of people say they're risk takers and whatnot.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Being a professional one, that's interesting. But please tell people what you what you're into now and how you kind of got there.
So, geez, when I say serial entrepreneur probably comes before professional risk taker, even though they're kind of one and the same. But
and that's another serious title, brother.
that's like how I got here was one thing to the next, man. Like just jumping from project to project. The skills picked up in one led to another. I literally started my first business when I was 11, selling computers because I wanted a computer. I wanted a better computer, so I would take the parts out of my old computer and Frankenstein something together, sell it to one of my classmates, and then built a new one. So that's literally where it started. From that, I did video editing and graphic design. Oddly enough, video editing led to DJing. DJing led to club and concert promotion. That led to comedy. Bunch of other small projects along the way, and here we are.
You got tapped into a lot of things. What do you always have that business like acumen type of mind, or was it something that was you saw somebody else do it and you got interested? Like, how did that go about?
I think I just wanted things before I was able to actually get a job and work for them. So just trying to find the path to get things that I wanted as a kid. So I guess you could say, yeah, I had that business sense, but really I just wanted a computer or wanted a video camera or just wanted whatever toy that my parents couldn't afford and they weren't hiring at 8 and 10 and 11, right? Mm-hmm. So whatever I could do, people typically, or my friends would have like the paper route and whatever. I just like didn't go that particular route, whatever I could hustle, whatever I could do from a young age just to get the money I needed to do whatever I wanted to do. So you guys were talking about basketball earlier. For me to play for a rep team that I couldn't afford was finding something to hustle or whatever, just so I can help my parents out or whatever. So it just one thing led to another, man.
Yes, dog. Okay, so could you let us know a little bit about what your day to day now looks like a little bit in terms of being that for a manager of comedians or whatever the case is?
Yeah, definitely. Like day to day, really, it really varies depending on what projects are going on or what have you. But typically, I work out of my home office. Wake up, check emails, see what's on the agenda. I'm responsible for things such as taking bookings for my comics and that sort of thing, as well as I arrange their tours. So if we're in the middle of planning a tour, I might be responding to venues, dealing with different technical setups at the venues, advertising, marketing, ticket sales. It's kind of like all my department, merch sales, fulfilling orders and all that stuff through the website is all my department. And then overall, like their brand deals, brand partnerships, helping them with completing some of their more complicated content. So for example, right now I'm working with editors on finishing a stand-up special. It's going to be released on YouTube for Valentine's Day. So nice. He recorded it, gone back to England. Everything else is my job. So
okay.
A day to day could be any one of those things, just depending on what we're working on that time.
Okay.
Or it could be getting up and getting on flights back to back to back, because we'll go on tour for 26 days, 30 days straight. Yeah. And we'll do like 35 shows over 30 days, so like wow. crazy stuff like that. So it varies pretty widely, mm-hmm. but.
Do they ever like cross? Like you might, like one comedian has something going on and another comedian, but you have to be at both? Like how do you manage that?
Typically two comedians won't be on tour at the same time.
Oh, okay.
So in addition to touring, they take other bookings for just other they might do a weekend at a comedy club.
Okay.
Or someone might book them to do a show out in St. Lucia or something. Typically that wouldn't be a part of a tour. So I don't have to be at every show like that. But they won't be touring at the same time.
Okay.
It's kind of like similar to like a record label in the sense where we know this guy's dropping, so this
yeah,
guy can't
we're,
drop
we're
right
okay, okay, okay.
You know
gotcha,
what I mean?
Got you.
Your project might get shelved. Drake's dropping. Okay,
yeah, yeah. Everybody,
everybody
you're
else
on the back burner. Really.
About how many people do you manage if you can say up?
Two main comedians were like full time. That's White Yardy and Maja. And then I could say I'm kind of like a booking manager or a tour manager to about six or seven other comedians, where it's like a project by project basis, where okay. I don't manage everything to do with them, but it's just yeah. when they need help with a certain project or a certain tour or whatever, then I'll represent them in that. Or if they're doing a deal where they feel like they need representation, that'll come through me, but other deals may or may not.
What's your strategy in terms of
I guess reaching out, or not even so much if you don't reach out, but like, what's your strategy in terms of reeling clients in, even in that, for anybody that wants to be a manager?
To be honest, at this stage, similar to what you were saying off camera about the just capacity and workload of the kitchen, sometimes it doesn't make sense to take on a bunch of clients, like for the sake of just saying I have clients,
right?
Like, you can get a big percentage or a percentage of a bunch of comedians, artists, whatever, that aren't doing like big projects. So you get obviously the dollar amount would then be smaller. Sometimes it makes sense to say, okay, you know what, I'm gonna work with 2-3 people and focus on just their stuff. They might do way less volume, but the money is higher, and like that just makes more sense.
Yeah.
So in terms of how I would get new clients, people come up to me most of the time because of they see who I'm working with, and I kind of pick and choose of which project I'll take on, or like sitting, a lot of these guys are big on social media. So I'll sit there like just like everybody else scrolling, and I'll come across somebody that I feel like, okay, you know what, this guy has a lot going on. Reach out and just see how things go from there. Just say, hey, this is who I am. Get the conversation started. And sometimes things are in alignment and work well, sometimes not, you know.
You said you started around 11 with the business and then selling to people. Was that ever something that was tough for you in terms of marketing yourself to people?
I was really shy.
So that's why it's kind of funny that you say that, because another guy that I know, Tashawn, who's big in the media space right now, he's also a person that's, you know, can come off like he's not.
Yeah.
But I know as a friend, just being, he's a guy that's kind of somewhat reserved as well. And doesn't really want to put himself out there all the time.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to hear that a lot of entrepreneurial people that I know,
share that quality.
Share that same quality. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of interesting.
I remember like the actual
a little bit. I be shy sometimes. I when I think about it too, it's like it, like Freck to me is not shy. So it's like I feel like I learned a lot of that from Freck.
Yeah.
To just put yourself out there more.
But I would agree, actually, to be honest with you.
That, you know what I'm saying?
I'm shy. I'm just trying to fit in now.
Yeah, as you mentioned that, one of my close friends that we started working together, maybe at like he must have been 13 or 14, and I'm a year older than him, so I was like 14 or 15. He brought me out of my shell a lot, because he's just such a loud, like big personality, like with women. With just in a gen, he'll go to McDonald's, and just the way that he orders from McDonald's, no one else is gonna order.
yeah, fair.
So they'll say, "So can I take your order? What would you order if you were in my situation?"
Yeah. It's like, what? Yeah, McDonald's.
Conversation. So I would say that he helped a lot in terms of changing me from being a more introverted person that just wanted to do something to actually getting it done. And I think I can almost pinpoint. Not the moment that it flipped for me, but where I acknowledged that it flipped. I remember me and my dad were going to buy, what do you call that, the grass, sod?
Sod, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to buy sod at this sod farm. And oddly enough, a gentleman in a do-rag.
working hard. You see the do-rag, you know he's working hard.
He looks like a hard worker. And I think he might have even had headphones in. He may or may not have had headphones in, but he was like around my age, maybe a little bit older than me. And I hopped out the car and I was like trying to sell him, at that time I was DJing, I was trying to sell him a mixtape. And he didn't buy it, but when we got back into the car, my dad was like, "Yo, I'm proud of you." And I was just like, "Why?" And he's just like, I haven't seen you do that before, where you just go up to anybody and just try to, you know, get, like, you're chasing what you want to do. And I see that you're, even when we're just here buying grass, you're still chasing it. And I was like, word. One, my father didn't seem as proud of me very often, so that resonated in that sense. And two, was like actually me kind of reflecting, saying, "Oh yeah, shit, I probably wouldn't have done that before. Like, I probably wouldn't have done that 5 years ago or whenever I was hustling something different." But yeah, so I think that was the, I was probably like, 14 at that time. That's when I really noticed, like all through elementary school, beginning of high school, I wasn't that guy by any by any stretch of the imagination. That and sports too. Sports will kind of break you out of your shell, especially if you're good. Like, even if you're quiet and good, you'll eventually get confident and loud.
Yeah, and it's funny that you say that, because like when I'm hearing these guys say they were shy,
Yeah.
I'm like, how?
Yeah, you knew.
And the reason why I'm saying how, but like, I don't know how they feel, but I'm saying how is when I look at them.
Yeah.
Good looking guys.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And we played ball together. And it's like, we're playing in front of all these people that you don't even know.
Yeah.
And you guys put on a show.
Yeah.
How are you going to look at me and tell me you're shy? Yeah. So that's when he said, like, well, like I brought him out of his shell. And then he's saying, because I never saw no shell. Yeah. I'm seeing, like, this podcast, he's the guy. Like, he's a guy. Yeah. These were the guys to me.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? So that's when they're saying they're shy. Like, I'm shocked. I'm like, you guys were shy.
But that brings on another point. When you're good at something, you can be confident in that space.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So when you're in that space, you're in your element, then you're exuberating confidence. You can see it radiating off you, that confidence. And then you get switched to another. Put a camera in his face and ask him, "Oh, how'd you play?"
Like, I can resonate with what you were saying too. Like, I've never been a person to be like super super open about like kind of things that are going on in my life. But like recently, like with us hosting like men's brunches and stuff like that, and me just I'll be sitting there talking to somebody, which I wouldn't normally do, now mentioning the brunch, and it's catapults into this whole conversation into so many different things, and now we're aligned with different people. And like even the other day when you came and see me at work, and then we met a gentleman by the name Charles, and was like, that's not something I would normally do. I wouldn't really sit there and talk to somebody and delve into what I'm doing. So
yeah.
I can see like that. I can see that that's my moment now too, kind of happening for me.
I guess I'm just different. I go with the flow. I'm a little standoffish because I don't know. Like, I have a big personality, so I don't know how some people might take it.
Mm.
They take it the wrong way, but I'm really not trying to be who you think I'm trying to be. It's just who I am, and I come off very loud, like you said, and very aggressive sometimes, like you said. Right? But I always think, like, be yourself. Just be you, right? Because if you're trying to be somebody that you're not, some people could feel it and they could read it. Like, for me, I just, like, if I'm not myself, I don't know who am I.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's why I be me, regardless of what.
You have like a super, it's a superpower, to be honest with you. Cause right, like you said,
Call me Iron Man.
You never saw either of us to be people that were shy, but in the inside, both of us were very shy, but you around you would never notice that because of how you act. We're like, okay, all right, you know what? Maybe we could do this too.
And there's something to be said in our culture sometimes where it's like we either want to be cool or not doing too much.
Yeah.
And sometimes
100%.
Sometimes you feel like speaking on something or promoting yourself can feel like I'm doing too much.
Yeah.
And like we have that. That's a term. What does doing too much even mean? Dog, you're doing too much. And it's like I'm almost scared to hear that I'm doing too much.
Yeah.
And it comes to like when I think about even promoting the podcast, I actually have no issue promoting the podcast.
Mm.
I feel like I have more of a challenge promoting myself. When I think about promoting the podcast, it's like, oh, we're doing it. So it's like, I'm not promoting myself. But if I'm promoting myself, now I'm like, am I pushing me onto, am I doing too much?
Well, a coping mechanism I've had for a lot of the stuff that I've done from the beginning is putting people that I'm close with around me on projects so I can say it's a we thing, regardless of whether it was a me thing.
Yeah.
So it felt like strength in numbers and I wouldn't feel like I'm just talking about me. We're doing this, we're doing that always. That was kind of like, I don't know. It definitely, I think it helped in two different ways. It helped with like you're saying, not feeling like I'm talking too much or being too arrogant about what it is that I'm doing. Just saying we made it feel better in that sense. And the other sense was also kind of like comforting to say I'm not just out here by myself, regardless of me doing 99% of the work.
Is that called imposter syndrome? Is that what that is? I'll have to research. I'm not sure, but like from what I understand is like kind of removing yourself away from the limelight of things, even though you may be
the only person
in that limelight.
It's similar. It's imposter syndrome, I think, deals with more people
individuality.
Like you're in a place and you're not comfortable in the place that you're in because you feel like you shouldn't be.
I don't deserve what I have. I'm an imposter.
I feel like he's not to say dimming your light, but you know what I mean? Like just so like the light is not directly shining on you. Yeah.
I can agree with what even Tashawn said about the podcast though. I remember we talked about it over like Christmas break with my family. My family was like, "Whoa, you're on a podcast? What can we don't know?" It's like, well, I only told my dad, I only told my mom.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was almost a thing for me like to almost like not want to share it all just because it's like, damn, too many eyes. But we need the eyes, right? Even so worse. It's like almost a hindrance to myself not to do the work.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
but that's interesting.
Put yourself out there, brother. I'm telling you, like, I'm
easier said than done, I tell you that.
No, like, brother, believe it or not. So, like, it goes a long way because even, like I told you guys, I was in the club and some random guy, like, I probably, like, draped him up 2 weeks ago. Right? Because, no, I did security.
So aggressive.
Okay, yeah, I did.
That's definitely right, brother. You know what I'm saying?
Draped him up, like, 2 weeks ago.
Sips drink.
And you know what I saw him last night. You know what he said to me? Yo, bro, I saw you on the pod and it's fire. And I was like, oh, respect. I'm like, but did you subscribe? He's like, I'm gonna work on that. But like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, when random people are coming up to you and telling you and like, bro, sometimes I don't even know if the podcast went out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Unless these guys put it in the group or, you know, it pops up on my Instagram. So when people are, you know, acknowledging that they're seeing it, I was like, yeah, that's us. We put ourselves out there. Like, yeah. You know?
That's a new thing to get used to as well as this, mm-hmm. as you guys' success grows. The when someone is looking at you and you're like, what's happening right now? Why is this person looking at me? It's because they know you. They've watched you. They've heard your stories. They feel like they have a personal connection with you and you have never seen this person before in your life.
So glad you said that because he was giving me an eye. I'm like, mask. I draped him up. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And I roughed him up. I shouldn't have done that. I'm like, here we go.
Have a problem.
I wanted a chill night. So I walked past him. I'm like, you know, I got to be a little grungy now. So I'm walking. Yo, bro. I'm like, what's up? Yo, I saw you on a podcast.
Shoulders drop, everything.
Yeah, bro, belly, you know, belly was tight before like, you got sponsors. You know what I mean? And he's like, I saw you on the pod, I was fired. And I'm like, yo, respect. You know what I'm saying? But you see, it's. I'm glad you said that. That look, right? And that look made me change the perspective. I'm not like, now did everybody in here watch that podcast? Because I feel like everybody's looking at me now, right?
No. So now, diving into the professional risk taker. If you guys don't see, he has these on cups and whatnot, you know what I mean? Oh, shout out to Wes for bringing these through for sure. I'll keep these around.
You don't even know what we're sipping.
But Wes, more specifically, tell us about that. Because I'm really interested. Like I said, that title is amazing.
So it's something I started saying from, I don't know, a decade ago, probably more. That I just like when people ask to kind of label the serial entrepreneur. Serial entrepreneur came after. Okay. But I never was able to describe what it is that I do. Like, I just do so many different projects or whatever. That was kind of like a deflective response. Like, what do you do? I'm a professional risk taker. And it's like, what is that?
Yeah.
What did you like to know? Just, so I'm actually made the shirt just for myself.
Okay.
And for 2 years or so, I used to just have a couple t-shirts, couple hoodies or whatever, where I used to just wear that. One of them was like a zip up hoodie where it was on the back. And every single time without fail that I was at, I don't know why I was just specifically here, but at the airport, doesn't matter what country I'm in, doesn't matter what city I'm in, someone's going to tap me on the back and have some sort of comment, whether it's where'd you get it? Or what's the biggest risk you ever taken? Or are you really a professional risk taker? It was like a conversation piece. So from when I started in COVID and lockdown, entertainment was obviously shut down, and that was where most of my eggs were in that basket at the time. I wish I'd kind of diversified and done some other things outside of entertainment going into COVID, but that's the situation I landed myself in where everything just stopped. I started kind of doing some more passion projects, and I was raising money to support Black businesses. And it was actually the restaurants that were going through it at the time. So I was raising money to help Black restaurants, started a nonprofit organization called Project Boss, Black owned success stories. And, tied the two together with that. So when you donated, you got either a t-shirt or a hat or a hoodie that said professional risk taker. And that's how it kind of just transitioned from something that was just a message that was mine to a message that I just decided to share with other people. Because like a lot of people have merch. This is essentially my merch, but a lot of people have merch that like is very much about them. Mm-hmm. This was something that could just feel like was about us. Like,
yeah,
anybody that subscribed to that narrative, you could wear it without feeling like you're wearing my shit. You're just wearing like it's a statement about you.
Yeah,
like a statement about what you believe in and what you stand for. Once you put it on, I don't think that like I've seen it in a lot of podcasts. I've seen it in a lot of like different like people wear it in a lot of like interviews. Whenever they kind of go in front of media, whatever, I see that's usually the time that they choose to wear it. And I don't think that it's ever been about I'm gonna wear Wes's gear on this.
I'm wearing a statement for me
for themselves, and that's what I love about it. Like when. From me wearing it just for myself and then transitioning it to something that I kind of put out publicly or whatever. That's the main thing that I love about that statement is everybody has their own interpretation, their own variation of what a professional risk is to them, or what, and it's not, and professional risk taker doesn't mean you're like, you're not wussy with it. You're not just out here doing random reckless behavior. Like, to being professional at risk taking means what risk to take and knowing what risk to take and what not. You know what I mean? Calculated risk taker is, again, synonymous with being a professional risk taker. And that calculated risk could be a mother who is going back to school because she sees the benefit of stepping up in her career for her kids. That's a risk. And that's not always just entrepreneurship type journey. It's what is your personal journey? What's the risk that you're taking? When are you going the path, the less traveled, you know, trailblazer, all them type of adjectives. That's what's like kind of all umbrellaed under that statement.
I'm glad you said that, because when I first saw professional risk taker,
yeah,
the first thing that came to my mind was the hood man, them. Right? Seriously, you take away the professional, they're not hearing professional, they heard risk taker. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And we all know when you hear risk taker, you know what I'm saying? What is it? But when you put the professional in, I like when you did that and you explained that the single mom going back to school, there's so many risks in anything you do. Yeah, so being the word professional changes the whole aspect 100%, of everything.
100%. A girl hit me up, was like, yo, I'm switching careers. I'm completely leaving the job that I'm at and starting something new. I need a hoodie. It was like her reminder. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, she wanted to embody what she's about to do with the hoodie.
Exactly.
The hoodie.
Yeah, that's so dope. That. Like I said, when I seen that, I couldn't, like, yo.
One of those ones, eh?
Because it's one of those things where it's like, again, you have things, or you're trying to level up in, or you're trying to say, you know what, okay, I have this, I'm comfortable here, and I want to strive to do this or whatever, or I'm worried about the setbacks or things like that are coming from this, and I don't want to go all the way over here because you never know. And so it leads you to believe, like Terrell was saying, just like, yeah, it might be a full-blown risk, but then you highlight that, you know what, no, it's not full-blown not knowing, even though it could be. It's more so like, yo, take the calculated thought behind it and be like, yo, what are the benefits, pros, cons type of approach, which is nice.
Well,
to hear.
I'm not a gambler. You see what I'm saying? That's one thing I want. Like, I make it very, very clear. I do not gamble. I make bets, but my bets are more investments because they're calculated. There's research involved in anything that I'm doing. Like, I literally don't even go to the casino. Like, if I go to the casino, I'm not spending any money.
Same. You're my dog.
It's funny that you brought it up. We spoke about that the last time. And I was going to tell you, if you do go to the casino, don't bring that guy.
Are you like that too?
Yeah, hold it up.
He just said he doesn't go to the casino.
No. Are you like that too in terms of the idea where him, he's like, it's like a negative energy. Would you be like, would you say you could be like,
it's not negative. It's really.
Oh, to tell. To
so like, why are we doing
that? Yeah, so like if we're betting together, he'll be at the table and be like,
why not?
It's not a good idea.
I'll go to the casino as a spectator, drink my little drink and watch them do what they're doing. Yeah. I just know that every single dollar that I put at risk at the casino is a dollar that I could have taken a much more calculated risk on myself.
Thank you. Yo, why you didn't explain it like that, bro?
That's what I said. You guys were hearing me.
You guys are losing looking back over at me because you don't want me to do this.
No, hold on. I like your answer.
You see, he's bad mind on you, bro.
You go there and you're sipping your drink, you're chilling. You're like, my dog's gambling. You hear, in the background, don't do it.
He's bad mind, bro.
He's like, you guys are looking back and we're looking back like, shut up, bro. Like, I'm trying to win something.
Wes, I'm just standing there, dog. Man, they're looking at me like this guy's bad-minding us.
Yeah, you gotta have your... You can't put energy up.
You know what I mean? Because they know I don't want them there. You know what I'm saying?
The nerve of you, bro. I didn't say that. You didn't say that.
One thing I do want to highlight is, like, a lot of what you said and which I really want to applaud is that when you talk about entrepreneurship, and I think this is the true spirit of entrepreneurship, you weren't talking about you. Mm-hmm. Everything you spoke about was about empowering others, from the boss thing, from professional risk taker, the brand. We're wearing that to feel good in ourselves. It's not about Wes and how I can make Wes bigger. It's about how can I serve this world. And I think more entrepreneurs have to start thinking about that, or need to remind themselves of that, because even I got lost in that. Like, I got lost in my career about being about me. Like, I need more followers, I need more engagement. And when you start making it about you, you start to lose sight of what's actually important.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that. For me, it comes a lot easier because, like me representing people. I'm always in a, I've never been a player. I've always been a coach. You know what I mean? Okay, I've always been comfortable being the behind the scenes type of role. Social kind of forces you to be in the forefront of your own story. So my story is a behind the scenes story. I'm never going to have, like, my guys have 1.5 million, 800,000, all these crazy, crazy followers. I'm never going to have that because I'm not them. I'm not the entertainment. I'm not in the spotlight. I'm just in kind of like a light that's right beside that is still, there's something to be said where you could, there's interest in this story. You know what I mean? Like, I guess Steve Jobs was one of those people that kind of brought from the what was in the background to the forefront when he's doing these big Apple unveilings or whatever. And you start to realize, like, okay, this guy is a big part of what it is that's coming out. Like,
yeah.
Before Steve Jobs, I don't think technology had a front man like that, where you're like, people are like praising this guy. Like, even Bill Gates is similar, where you knew of Bill Gates.
He's because behind the way, yeah.
But you know why you knew of Bill Gates? Because he was the richest man.
Right.
He was the richest man in the world. So you knew of his existence. Yeah. But technologically, there's not a lot of other people from that era. That's like the 90s, agreed, early 2000s kind of boom, where that guy was the forefront, right? Sorry, where there was a guy sort of in the forefront of technology. Social started to kick in, what, like, let's say 2010, yeah. It kind of is the booming of social. And now everybody that is just supposed to be a regular worker, a regular guy, has to have this whole profile, right?
Yeah.
So now it's easy to get caught up in my followers, my this, my that, because it's a part of what you're trying to achieve. Yeah. The difference with me is why it's been just a little bit easier is because I've always had a product to push that was bigger than me, that was more out there than me. So I'm just, it's the mentality of just giving this out to the world has been what I've always been doing. I don't have a product that's me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've never, like I'm not a rapper. I'm not a comedian. I'm not an actor. I'm not a this or I'm not that. I've never been in that. I'm the nerdy guy that does cool spreadsheets that make everything work. You know what I mean? So it's easier to get caught up in me when you know that you're just one of the gears that's making everything turn. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So to give you your credit, like, as you're being the brand, as you're being the face, as you are the guy on TV, literally, it's easy to get caught up more in that, because it's a big part of it for you. You know what I mean? Nobody else is gonna represent what you're trying to do better than you.
It's true, but for me, and it's like when I acknowledge it's bigger than me, I think that's when like true peace and value comes from, when I do what I do. Because if you talk about these rappers, singers, anybody, it's like when they even acknowledge themselves that it's bigger than them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's when I feel like they find true peace in what they do.
I think I could definitely relate to that.
You know what I mean?
Finding just what's at the absolute forefront of what you're doing is not necessarily your why.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The way it appears to everybody,
that would be the case.
That is not necessarily the like. I've been struggling so much with this. I've talked to you about it a bit before, where I know that if I film everything and put everything out, and I actually become the personality, similar to like a Chef Ramsay,
yeah, yeah,
who is being like, if I be the professional risk taker and I show everything that I do, the ins and outs of what I'm doing from point, I know how much that's gonna benefit me overall. But will I be at peace with that?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's a big transference of who I am and me doing something, because I think it'll just make everything bigger and I'll be more successful, whatever. But I think I'm gonna lose a part of who I am in doing that. And I'm more quieter. I'm more behind the scenes. I don't really like when I go. It's crazy. Watch when this shit blows up and you're in a completely different city that you've never been to before. And someone is looking at you and just like, what is happening right now? Mm-hmm. And then they just show love. It's like, it's a crazy, crazy feeling. Or for them to come up and be like, oh, yo, like what you did last week was so cool. And it's just like, bruh, how do you know this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because as big as you might see this shit, like when you get lots of like views on a video, like I have some videos, even with my small following, that's had like 300,000, 500,000 views. It's hard to equate that to actual 500,000 humans that have seen something. They see a lot of stuff. Don't get me wrong. So you might not be that important, even though they're one of the 500,000 that saw what you said or heard what you said or whatever. But that's 500,000 people that you possibly could have impacted in a way that they have no connection, or you have no connection to them. And then when you're just putting that out into the world, it's a different feeling. For the good of the project, it might be the best thing to do, but it's definitely something that I'm personally struggling with. And I'm saying I don't know if I want to be that guy.
Yo. Even just sitting here and thinking about that, trying to put yourself in that shoe is insane. Like, just to know that you could be impacting that. And like you said, going somewhere, even somewhere in the city, like I said, I've never had the experience as yet, even as you guys, to be like, yo, someone's coming up to me, say, yo, good looks on the pod, da 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 da, in person. But to, again, sit there and mind your business, eating the foods, whatever the case, and somebody comes up to you, like, yo, I like what you did with that. And like, what I did with what? Like, that would be, I don't even know.
I'm sure for a lot of people, it feels amazing. I mean, even to me, to a certain degree, it does feel good, but it's also just another side of it where you're like, damn, I've lost a part of my, like,
anonymity.
Privacy. Yeah. I lost a part of my privacy. Like, things that I say or do might be that much more, like, scrutinized at this stage now. Like,
people hold on,
like,
to.
I have to worry about things I didn't have to necessarily worry before, because you're representing so much more than just yourself at that point in time. It's just so much. It's a lot of weight. That's what it really boils down to. It's a lot of weight. And it's something that I struggle with, where I say, if I do take that on, I know how much it can benefit everything overall, but damn, a selfish part of me is just like, eh.
So how do you play with that mentally? Like, is that something that really, really sits in your brain from each project to project, or is it something that periodically will come about just on a...
You know when it happens, or when I really teeter-totter with it or whatever, it's when I'm relying on somebody that I'm working with to get something done for me
that I know
I could have done myself. So, like, I need a certain, let's say it's as simple as a show that I'm doing. I need an endorsement. Like, I need a video for that to go out and hit the people that I'm trying to hit, when I know that I can be just as entertaining and record this video. At the following I have now, it's not going to be that impactful. But if I take on and say, yo, I'm going to promote my, like, I should be, a big part of me wants me to host my own shows. Like, to be the guy on stage, hosting the show, presenting the talent, as I do in the background, right? I'm putting out the ads and I'm structuring all the finance and stuff behind it, and I'm presenting this show. Why not be the guy to first walk out on stage and address the people and tell them, all right, cool, this is the lineup that I've prepared, I've curated, and me, and put myself out there in that degree. So they look at me that way, and then when I go and say, hey, this is my next show, it's that much easier to sell it, right? Now I'm not relying on these people to say, okay, yeah, I'm going to be at this guy's show, I'm going to be at this location. I'll just say, I'll do it myself. That's where I struggle with it the most, where I'm like, I know if I start, I can build this into something. But there's a whole lot more that goes that comes with that I don't really know that I necessarily want, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the to answer your question, that's the times when I really struggle with it, when I'm like
the delegation process.
Yeah, like when I'm relying on somebody to do something that I know I can get done myself. You know what I mean? Or even like simple as paying for radio ads or whatever. I'm like, you know how much simpler this could be if I just ran it through my own platform, where I'm doing my own way and build up this persona of I'm the guy that does this. Like, people kind of see it, but it could just be way, way bigger, way more impactful. Ultimately, overall, cheaper in the long run for me to do it that way. But
I think that I think you should do it though. Honestly, like, I know obviously you have your own little background stuff that would kind of hold you back from it, but I think there would be an audience for that. Like listening to you speak, like, I'm like fully dived into what you're saying, and I'm like, I can only imagine somebody that has to go through that on a day to day, how much that could help them go through their job and what they have to do, right?
It's a thing. I'm struggling with it. So with when I started the Project Boss thing, with the Black owned success stories, it was literally using my ability to storytell, my ability, like, I know how to get the message to translate to the masses, and I wanted to just, like, the same thing I'm saying I can do for myself, I wanted to do that for other people. So for example, there's this girl, Tiana, I don't know why her name slipped me. Tiana Padmore. She wrote a book called Trailblazers, The Black Pioneers That Have Shaped Canada. So you know, we know about the Rosa Tubman and Malcolm X's and all these impactful figures that are Americans. We don't know a whole lot of Canadian Black impactful figures. So this was a kid's book. And she wrote it and got it illustrated, put everything together, and was trying to get it published now. And all the publishers that she was going through, it was just, she's like an activist, and she's she works in the government, and she's very technical about certain things. And just the last lines in the contracts that said that they would have final say on how the book comes out, she couldn't sign to that because it was all white corporations that are going to publish this book. And she's just like, how can I write a book about Black voices, Black pioneers, and try to have this to empower all kids, but Black kids as well. And I'm writing this, and I'm approving all these illustrations, or whatever. And I'm going to give it to somebody else to change it, to potentially change it. Even if they didn't change it, the contract says they could potentially change it. So she wouldn't sign with anybody. And then she self-published, and she did a GoFundMe. What's the other one?
Crowdfunding.
Kickstarter.
Yeah.
A Kickstarter campaign, and she was able to raise $50,000. And she published it herself and got it out to everybody. And based off of that and all the people that supported her, she was then able to go to chapters with a completely different, you know, like she's a guy now.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like, this is what I'm doing. Yeah, this is the numbers is backing up or whatever. It's done already. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so her chest was a lot higher, and they did a completely different deal with her the second time. Those are the type of stories that I want to be involved with. In interviewing those people, and I was actually a part of her journey. So I have, like, when she was just kicking ideas to me or whatever, we have documented things from back then that I want to be able to tell those stories to inspire other people. I think that my role is better as helping tell the stories of other people than really telling
your story.
That's how I feel overall. Like that's what I would love to do. And it's because that was a passion project. So I'd like to get back into that, because it takes the biggest thing when you're doing stuff with charity, people underestimate how much it really takes out of you. Because it's not just, okay, we raised X amount of dollars and put to it. A lot of times, because you're doing charitable work, like filming stuff and editing stuff for somebody that is like starting from ground zero, that needs the people that need the charity, is way different. Like if I go to a corporation, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna film and edit this for you. They have all the assets already ready to go for this, that, and third. So you're getting paid way more, and it's an easier job. We say, okay, I'm gonna do this for a charitable organization, whatever. A lot of times you're doing it for free, and it's taking like three times, four times as long as it would have taken to get paid to do something. So it's really, really a passion project that I keep trying to carve out little space, little time to do. But I think that's the biggest thing that I want to do as far as elevating and amplifying voices. That's the project that is kind of on the back burner that I like to bring to the forefront.
Love that.
Shifting gears a little bit, I want to ask you, or actually open it up to the room, a little bit about, I guess, shaping and changing the narrative around setbacks and kind of the necessity of what that means to people, obviously. So what I mean by that is saying, like, everybody, I guess, kind of giving your thoughts or sharing a bit about how can we go about changing the narrative of what a set. Obviously, there's pros and there's cons to setbacks and things like that, but that starting over process, that okay, you deal with a setback, but there's the light on there's a light at the end of the tunnel type of mind frame, where, you know, I want to kind of change that narrative to people where it's like, well, I want to start this thing, but I don't know if it works for me. Like that, I guess, basically branching off of the risk-taking mentality. So I just kind of want to open it up to the room and for you guys to kind of share your thoughts on what that would mean.
I think for me, like, the biggest setback I can think of was in risk-taking behavior, but it wasn't professional risk-taking.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, when I think of my biggest setback, it was actually, like, getting arrested when I was, like, 19, 20. And what was so wild about that is, it's like, I don't recommend anybody gets in trouble with the law and commits crimes, but it's, like, that experience, like, that setback in my life really changed my life. Like, it changed my whole reality and how I saw the world. Mm-hmm. Like, even down to, I remember them two sitting me down and being like, brother, we're worried about you. What kind of path are you going down? And it was like, it took me getting in trouble and getting arrested with the law for me to turn my whole life around. And then the setbacks that came out of that setback. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I was kicked off my basketball team in university. I had to now rebuild a name for myself, rebuild my reputation, learn that I wasn't invincible, learn that, you know, character matters, learn there are so many lessons I learned from that setback that make me now understand the importance of doing the right thing, following the law. And like, just, I remember even there was a job I almost, like, I wanted to work at Enterprise, like, just at the end of university. And what most of you might not know, like, when you have a criminal record, it stays on your record for like 5 years about till you can go apply to get it off. And for me, I applied for this job at Enterprise Rent-A-Car. And I remember, like, at that age, I was a big dude. I was like, yo, I have rentals.
You're the guy.
You know what I mean? I'll be wearing a suit to work all the time. Like, I was like, okay.
Professional as it gets.
Yeah, bro. I go through the interview process. They loved me.
Yeah.
And I get to the end. And they're like, yeah, we're going to give you this job. Just fill out this paperwork and just go get your criminal record check. And I was like, yo, so about that, can I talk to you for a second? And I'm talking to the manager and I'm like, yeah, there's just like a little thing with the criminal record thing. There's like a little thing. A
little smidge on there.
A little smidge on there. He's like, ah, man, Sean, we love you, but sorry, bro. And that was it. I was done. And it was like that experience of just like there was jobs I couldn't get. There was just it was such a low point in my life, but it taught me the importance of the consequence of understanding the consequences of your actions. Mm-hmm. And from that point forward, not even that point, but from even before that, I learned so much value came from that setback. And it was a tough lesson to learn. It's not one I would wish upon anybody, but I think it was very necessary for me to become who I am today. So that's like one example of a setback, but like definitely one that has shaped me.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes hard to even talk about. I don't really talk about it much publicly because I'm like, are people going to judge me? What are they going to think? But it's like, if you look at where I've come to today, it just shows that those things don't define me. Mm-hmm. I've been able to jump over those hurdles that were present from those setbacks. And I hope that inspires people to know that you can start from anywhere. Mm-hmm. And setbacks don't define you.
Sure. It's crazy how that's still, like, how did that affect your travel?
To the U.S., problematic.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It's crazy that how much they still have that. Like I had a friend who was going across the border with her mom at like 50 something years of age, and she's crossed border multiple times, but for some reason they pulled up some shoplifting charge from when she was like probably like 19 or something like that. She's 50 something. They turned her around. Like, what?
You know what's like interesting about that is I did some research, obviously, and it's really only Canada and US that share that.
Do that?
Anywhere else you want to go, pretty much free to go. You know what I mean?
Crazy.
It's and you find that a lot, speaking me being a talent agent, just like even with artists like that have anything like that, whether you're music, comedian, whatever lane you're in. It's like if you have something that's on your record and then to go to the Western side of the world where it's like the US is success, the Canada's whatever, and you try to go and make a name for yourself in these spaces, those things could be what hold you back. But anywhere else you go in the world, the world's like, you know what? Right. We're not going to hold that as the highest standard. What holds you back?
You know what's crazy? Was there a specific reason why you asked me to speak on this specific topic?
I think because you definitely told me about trials and tribulations, like setbacks you had in your life. And it's like, I kind of had the vision for us to talk about some of the things that have held us back or like times where we thought we were down and out and that we bounced back from.
So one of the clips that went kind of semi-viral, I didn't even make the connection until right now, until you said as a talent manager, how I got into comedy is crazy.
So before that, I was doing club and concert promotion. I'm one of the first people to bring a lot of the dancehall artists to Toronto, to Canada. One of them was Idonia. I was involved with a team that.
How long ago was that, by the way?
2010. Okay. 2009, 2010.
So I have an interesting story.
You've been working.
I have an interesting story about Idonia, right? So that guy there, bro, big fan of I am, right?
Yeah.
I remember when he came to, he was supposed to have a concert at government.
Yeah.
And couldn't get in.
Yeah, sorry.
Livid.
Yeah, sorry.
Livid. I was pissed.
Apologize about that.
Some of those same reasons, right? So it's interesting. But yeah, that's funny.
So, when I asked about travel or whatever, I wasn't even making the connection, but I was 20, I would have been what? 26 at the time. That was a $53,000 loss.
What?
Yeah, so
who comes up with that?
You book the venue, you book hotel, you book.
So what happened was the first time we tried to do it was 2000 and I think it was 2010 was the first time, not 2009, mm-hmm. 2010. Mm-hmm. This is off the back of doing Charlie Black we had brought for the first time. We're involved in the team that brought Movado here for the first time. Like we're hot. everything was going our way. You know what I mean? And so this was gonna be the show. And the first time it was around the same time that they were trying to get Dudas, Christopher Koch, mm-hmm. and they were trying to squeeze him. They were trying to squeeze Jamaica to hand him over because they wanted him extradited to America.
Yeah.
So they just started taking away people's visas. One of the top businessmen, artists, entertainers, they started licking away all of them visa, like from they're like, okay, cool. So you're not gonna send us this guy, no problem. Yeah, this guy can't travel. That guy can't travel. Yeah. The people that had nothing to do with anything. Yeah. And Idonia was one of those people that just lost his American visa during that time. So eventually, Jamaica complied and he was extradited. But then all those people had to reapply for visas. And the same way that Canada and U.S. are very closely linked, they go to the Canadian embassy. And the system was so stupid. I don't know if it's improved because I just turned my back on that whole industry. I could pay an artist his deposit, get their flights, the venue, all that shit.
They'll allow him to come here.
They're not giving you an appointment to see if you get the visa or not until days before the event. You could plan the event a whole year in advance. Like, okay, cool. When's the event? All right, 3 days before that, we'll give you the visa appointment. So I, as the promoter, have to do everything completely not knowing if it's official, whether he's going to get the documentation to travel or not, which is what I did. So they asked Donia what the reason why his American visa was taken away. He doesn't have a direct answer for that. He took it away, whatever. Didn't approve it. So then that was, I believe, June or something of 2010. We tried to do it again the following year, Canada Day, July. It was the May long weekend of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Canada Day weekend the following year, July. So now I think I know everything. I had drivers picking this guy up to go drive him to whatever paperwork he needed to do. I've never been to Jamaica in my life at this point in time either. But I have people running errands for me. I had he didn't have to wait in no lines because I had this person dealing with that person. Like when he gets to the Canadian embassy, paying off all these people. They're like, yeah, we're going to make it work. Thousands and thousands of dollars. Same thing happened. So the event just didn't happen. Radio ads spent twice. Plane tickets bought twice, venue paid for twice, flyers out twice, 53K.
It's funny that you say that because I was like, when I'm hearing you say all this, I'm like, there has to be more. And then you answered my question. I was going to say, didn't you know this before you booked all this?
Yeah, you can't do anything.
You can't, and there's nothing you could do, huh?
Nothing you can do.
So
all the other times we did it, it worked out. We got that. That was the only time I ever had an artist that didn't make it through.
Yeah, I was about to use your professional risk taker right there, right?
Yeah, it's a part of it. So anyways, the bright side of the story, in between the first time we did the show and the second time we did the show, I always did an event for my birthday. It was usually the same. That party was called Dance Outfit. And the party, we used to do that party for my birthday. And because I had all these people's money between the first show and the second show, we just postponed it. We didn't cancel it. So I had all these people's money. I'm like, there's no way I can promote a party for my birthday. Yeah. There's absolutely no way. People are vexed already. There's no way I can come up with a party for my birthday. So I did something small. at a Chinese buffet, 150, 200 people, dinner and comedy show, all you can eat, $30. And that was the first comedy show I ever kept. So that became my transition from said, you know what? Love Jamaica, love dancehall, can't invest in this ever.
Can't do it.
invest in this ever again because you just don't know.
Yeah.
What made you fall on comedy though? Like how did that come?
It was something I was thinking about for a long time, but because I was so caught up in doing parties and thing, I never really got. I wanted to do comedy. I wanted to do spoken word. I wanted to do like street magic. Those are the three types of entertainment that I was always thinking about doing. I'm actually thinking about doing the street magic this year, but the other I fell on comedy and just stuck with it. The rest is history. You know what I mean? 53K back. Oh, 26 years old, bro.
My heart hurts.
Yeah.
My heart hurts, bro. Yeah. What?
Yeah. So the clip that went viral, I said the thing about it is, in order for you to have lost 53,000, you had to have generated 53,000.
Mm.
And that knowledge of how to get to that place, that can't be taken away from you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So for every loss, I had to lose 10,000 to learn how to make 20,000. I had to lose 20,000 to learn how to make 53.
Fair.
And although I lost 53, I'm definitely up right now. So
yeah.
It wasn't really a loss. It was a
experience gain.
It was a setback and a professional risk for to get back.
That's a bar. Come on. So in that space though. Like, what was your mind going through? Like, I obviously, you can speak about it now for it to be like one of those transitions that is, you know, you know how to promote and to gain this, that. But in those times, what was your mindset like? You just trying to
figure
yourself?
I thought my life was over. Yeah. Shout out my cousin, Tweez. He was involved with, whatever I said, I had my people around me those times when I was doing those promotional events, whatever. I had my closest people around me just to feel like we were doing it as a team. And he was there. He was invested as well. And we found out the show was supposed to be on a Saturday. And we found out on the Friday afternoon that, like, definitely, like, he's not getting on this flight. And we just drove to the LCBO. Didn't even leave the parking lot. That's like, yo, we literally laughed. Like, we're like, dog,
there's nothing else to do right
now. Like, what?
Yeah.
How did this happen twice? Like, it was just, we're just there in the parking lot. We're like, everybody's gonna kill us.
Yeah. I was literally about to ask you that. Like, when he's not coming now and you realize he's not coming.
Yeah.
What are your steps into that? Like, how do you get that word out? Like,
yeah, like social wasn't even big like that back then. So the first time we ended up doing, we said, all right, cool. Everybody can come into government for free. And we had another second party at 6 Degrees that time. And we kept two parties on the same night. Everybody that had a ticket, free admission. So the DJs all still got to get paid for that night or whatever, whatever. So we're like, yo, just cool. Like, that was our just cool type of movement where, like, this is going to happen. It just a little postponed and the second time, boy, huh?
Bro.
You didn't know what to do, bro.
You guys ever see that that little video meme on Instagram of like Vince McMahon doing that little cry and it's government in the background? You guys ever see that before?
It was in the background?
Government.
Oh, no, I never seen it.
So it's like the slow music, Vince McMahon's crying, like so it's like, you know, speaking about times where it's like, yo, it's sad. Yo, that is literally, I've been to plenty of parties at Government Cool House.
Yeah.
That one is the one that sticks out. And then when you say, no, yo, brother, sorry about that. No, I'm sorry. Yo, bro. Yeah. What? Oh, my days. Yeah. So, you know, even just thinking of that. Man.
I could speak to the feeling like your life was over. Like, so I think for like my biggest setback that I would say, or one of the biggest setbacks that I had was while I was playing like basketball, like really getting into it. I went to a school in the States, subsequently gave me like fake grades and whole ordeal. I ended up coming back to Canada and taking some classes or whatever the case is, but I remember going to the guidance counselor and her being like, yeah, well, like your grades didn't transfer over and like you're not going to graduate with everyone. I was like, what? Look, I just gave you credits. But she's like, yeah, those credits are not, like, they're not coming over. So because of that, I remember being like, all right, I'm not going back to school no more. I'm not graduating because I'm not going to go back to school for another year. And be in classes with the kids that were younger than me and whatever the case is. So I never really graduated from high school. I never really tell people this story, but I remember in that time feeling like my life was over. I was never going to play basketball. I remember one of my biggest goals was like trying to be like become a McDonald's All-American. I remember being home and my phone going off and like, I'm like, fuck, I'm not in school. This thing just came up. This thing just went off and said like, become a McDonald's All-American. And I just felt like I was at my lowest point. But I think that through perseverance and like having a good circle and then being like, yo, it's not over or whatever the case is, like by the grace of God, you know what I mean? I got into university. I have a university degree and found a way out. You know what I mean? And like being young, that's hard.
Yeah.
To try and figure your way out of that situation. And like I said, circle is so important. Family is so important. And yeah, like just to younger kids and to anybody experiencing kind of like setbacks or you can make it out of it. Like, you know what I mean? And like, I think that I was at my lowest point. Like, I think I remember so many times being just sitting in the dark, like, what am I going to do now? Right. But I could sit before you today and like, you know, I have a university degree that like nobody could take away from me. It's weird. I don't have a high school diploma. But, you know what I mean? I don't have a high school diploma, but I have a university degree. Right. And like, and I'm still trying to do things where I can impact community or affect change in like places that I work. You know what I mean? And like, people don't know that. And I mean, I guess maybe they could have judged me if they did know that, but like my work speaks for itself, right? And you know what I mean? And you can always make it out of a situation. Yeah, and so, like you said, you had to figure out how to make 20 to lose 10, right? So in that situation, I had to figure out how to come out of that hole. Yeah. And again, with people around me, I was able to do that. So
appreciate you guys for sharing those things, man.
I'm listening to all of these and I'm there like, what's my setback? You know, like I don't really know if I had a setback because like I'm listening to all you guys speak and I'm sitting here really thinking, where was my setback? But when you listen to everybody, like not only in this room, I remember like some of the older mans in my neighborhood, they would always say, yo, if you have a kid, it's a setback. Mm. Right? So I was always scared to have kids. So I'm like, nah, I'm not having that. And then one of the older mans, yo, don't get a car. Setback. You know? I don't really consider them setback. Like, for example, my kids. Like, I had my first son thinking that it was going to be a setback and I wasn't going to do what I want to do. It wasn't a setback.
Yeah.
People, you got to be situated right. And some people are not situated right, so they consider that a setback. But if you listen to, like, them say that was a setback, I thought it all the time until I had my kid and realized it wasn't a setback and I had another one. Mm. It's not a setback. Those are gains to me. Mm. My car, like, I have an expensive car, but it never felt like a setback, right? Because I was always in a good situation where some people are not. And then like you said, sitting in the parking lot, boy, you know, Deion sitting in the dark. How am I going to get out of this? Tashawn sitting in a cell. You know what I mean?
What is a cell, brother? Be like,
I didn't think you guys were gonna do that.
Oh my goodness.
You know what I mean?
Oh my God. I was waiting for what do you
appreciate it. I appreciate
sliding the cup on the bar. Oh my God.
Why do you always get that? You
know, I don't even know. Oh my God.
Is he? That's not gonna wonder now. Is he?
Oh my God. The man told me be myself.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah, so I'm like, I don't really know if I had a setback. And to be honest, like, I'm grateful for everything that I have and gone through. Like, you know, and like I told you guys before, like, I listen to everybody say what their setbacks and what not to do and what to do. And like, I always like just follow them. Like, I'm not gonna do that because I see it not work out for that person. But I don't even know if that's the strongest thing to do sometimes, because like the man told me having kids is a setback.
Yeah.
But I don't even know if he was that's what I'm saying. I don't even know if he was a good father or not. Like, I just, you know what I'm saying? I just knew him for, and then when he said that, I was like, ugh, yeah, having kids is a setback. But
I also think that you could start in the setback. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like from where you come from, you're not supposed to be where you are today, right? So you did not necessarily, like, you weren't here and then went low, but you could say that you've come out of a place that you normally people don't come out of.
That's why I told you guys on the last one, I said, I don't mind starting at the bottom.
Yeah.
Because, like, I like to see my process and how I came up to now that I'm here. And it's like, damn, that's a long road.
Yeah.
Right? Because even when some of the hood niggas see me still, they're like, yo, fam, what you doing? Yes, not that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, keep it moving, right? Yeah. But yeah, so you know, I'm sorry you guys went through those setbacks, you know.
Yeah, like to your point though, it's literally a matter of perspective, because when you look at your life on a timeline, like the skills gained having been coming from where you come from, or having to go through what you had to go through in the quote unquote setback, you might not have been prepared for what was coming next. You feel me? So one of the biggest kind of feelings that I had of being in the setback was during COVID. I spoke to it on like for entertainment. I spoke to it as it, like being a professional player, professional athlete, working out, training, preparing your whole life to be at the top of your game, and then getting injured is something completely out of your control, right? Yeah. Like I could make $0 off of entertainment, and every year I had the best year from previous to go to absolute zero. Like yeah. I did my last show February 2020. I didn't do another show until May of 2022. So 2 full years, the bills still came in. Yeah. Living in a downtown condo, the bills still
those
came
those
in.
Don't stop. Right,
they don't stop. But I experimented with so many things in those 2 years. Read a lot. The world kind of changed a lot in terms of like on social, a lot of these live streaming and things that didn't exist before. Like everyone was on Zoom. QR codes started popping. QR codes were out for like 10 years.
Forever. Yeah.
QR codes started popping. BlackBerry had QR codes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So just all those changes and all these things happening. A setback, when you look at the timeline, it's not really a setback. It's just a thing that happened. You know what I mean? It's just a thing that happened, and it's chess, not checkers. It puts you in the position where you need to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You always touch on a topic like that. You always say it doesn't happen to you, it's happening for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's real talk.
This guy's been spitting bars lately, yeah? You trying to become a rapper low-key or something?
I keep asking him that. You guys don't need to know. He's dropping bars. I keep looking at him like, who is this guy? I don't know who he's talking to, but it's stuff's rolling in, and I love it, bro. The development. But, yeah, man, does anybody really have any more words for the viewers, I guess, in terms of, you know, kind of, how do I put this? Like when it comes to risks and setbacks, kind of like encouraging them to don't look at them like that, like Terrell was saying, or to kind of just looking at that, and changing the narrative behind that and just being like, yo, it's okay to go for that, to strive for those things, because you can never, like, you may never know, it might work out positively for you. You know what I mean? So is there anything more that you guys would like to share in terms of that?
I think there's just like a couple quotes that come to my mind, like, Nothing that's for you will miss you. Simple things. Mm-hmm. Every rejection is just a redirection. I think that's really what it is. Like setbacks, like Terrell has said this even in the past, like these are not failures, these are learnings, right? And it's like a lot of times we're going through something and we're going through that thing for a reason, right? And I think when you're in it, it's hard to see it.
Of course.
But when you look back at it, like even when he's alluding to having his son, he would have thought going into it, it would have been a setback. But then he went through it. You know, it's not. But sometimes it takes us going through it to have the perspective. So it's just like the real thing I'm trying to say here is keep going. Mm-hmm. Because you have to go through it in order to realize why you even went through it. And I think that's what we're getting at today, is like changing your mind about going through that thing. Changing your mind about a setback. You will bounce back.
Yeah.
But it's like you have to keep going to bounce back.
Right.
And a lot of people stop.
Hmm. He says, I had a, despite our what you said earlier about casinos, another kind of sort of analogy that I had for the whole Idonia situation or whatever, it's only a loss if you get up from the table. So as you're betting on yourself, when you stop and you say, all right, fuck it, I'm done with this, whatever, that's when it's a loss.
Mm-hmm.
You're just down. But as long as you continue to bet on yourself, as long as you continue to persevere, you ain't lost nothing. You know what I mean? It's not actually a loss.
Yeah, don't tell these guys that. They're going to drive to Niagara Falls tonight.
I ain't got to go that far. So I would not be mine. I ain't got to go that far.
But Tashaun, please, let's get into the game here.
All right. So for our guests, we play it too. We play this special game called Let's Talk About It. It's so that us as men can have more vulnerable conversations Sometimes we have women do it, play on it too. We've had women guess.
Okay, okay.
But the idea of the game is there's three stacks of cards. The white one is more surface. Mm. The blue one is medium, and the dark one is deeper. Mm. So it's like we leave it up to the guests to choose what they're feeling. We pick a card, and then you can answer it or you can pose it to a person.
Is this a professional risk or a calculated risk?
It's a professional one.
Fine, brother. Or is this a reckless risk or a professional? I'll go with the black one.
I'll go with the black. Ooh. All right, you want me to pick one for you? You want me?
Just take the one off the top,
bro. Take one off the top.
Whatever. There you go, brother. Name a time where you've done someone dirty.
I thought I put that in the box.
You guys are kidding me.
Yeah, we gotta do a different card. We did that one already.
How much time we pull this card? I'm
convinced you guys put it at the top, bro.
Since we started the podcast, I promise you it's come about.
You know what the crazy part is? There's probably like triples of that card.
Bro. It has to be, bro.
Hold on. I'm gonna look at And to be honest, I don't think I really had an answer for that, even if I really tried.
No one does, brother.
Like, don't get me wrong. Like, there's things that I've done, like,
but people have the perception of, dude.
You're the villain. We're all the villain in someone's story.
Yeah. But like, for it to be like so significant, it's like I didn't call back. Like, you know what I mean? I ain't called back for a good reason. I just didn't want to tell you that reason.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's the darkest thing you have never told anyone?
No, hold on. Why is he...
Move.
Hold on. Give him this one.
Who did this?
You think I'm joking? I shuffled
I them. I thought a man shuffled them.
Nice one to put that back.
What is the biggest insecurity growing up? How do you feel about it now?
Yo, what's wrong with you guys?
That's the thing. I'm joking. I'm dead.
Okay, yo, wait.
We're cutting to this.
This one's definitely.
Okay.
Where's the cards?
Those right there. And the next one. Even throw that in the box here.
How many cards?
Look in the box, quick. Look in the box, quick. Look in the box, quick. And see what card's there.
There's none in the box.
There's one card. What does it say?
What's the time you did someone dirty.
Okay.
So
I did take it out.
So hold on.
I did take it out.
I made triples of the cards.
This is a prototype.
Okay. Okay, cool.
You created
I made the card. Okay,
juice, don't matter. Prototype. Those are out.
No, I'm just making sure that...
Can I come up again?
I'm sorry, you're trying to calculate the questions. Professional risk taker. Let's go.
All right, we'll cut to this. Don't worry.
So I'll just take one.
Yeah, so you draw again.
Wait.
Let him sit down first.
Let him sit down. We'll cut to it. I'll ask again.
We don't want to do the whole thing from the top.
All right, so, Deshaun, let's get into our game here. Let's talk about it.
No, we don't got to do all that.
No, he'll just...
Take the card.
He asked me, he said specifically, do you want to pick it? I'll pick it for you.
Bless,
so then you just cut to him, pick it.
Bless.
The black one.
You want to go blue? You want to go black?
We're black.
All right. Who is one person that loves you? Jesus Christ.
Amen.
My mom. Well, sure, my mom. She loves me unconditionally. My mom, like, if I call my mom right now and told her I murdered somebody, she'd come with a shovel. Like,
she's Jamaican?
No, she's actually Grenadian, but I feel
still riding.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Caribbean parents and my mom, technically single black mother, like my father was around but not to the degree that she would have liked, so nobody can tell her nothing about her kids. Nobody can tell her nothing about her kids. Like, if my mom's cussing me about something and you over here and you try to join in, that's the quickest way to have my mom turn completely on you.
I like your mom already.
So yeah, that's the, if there's one person in this world I know loves me, it's Mama Hype.
Team West. So I like that.
100%. That wasn't so deep.
No. You want another one? That's what you're trying to say.
I don't know. The way that you guys are drawing the cards is like you draw 50 cards in one putt.
Not even that. You know what I mean? It's a happenstance.
You want to do another one? Or you want to do?
Yeah, I'll do a...
Okay, answer that.
You do a white one?
Yeah. Do a white one.
I'll do a... I don't trust the black one.
Black?
I'm going to get one of the ones that you guys don't want.
Name a time that you've completed a random act of kindness.
No, I like that.
I like that too. I don't know, you know. Again, that's perspective. What's an act of kindness? Like I could say donating to the homeless, or we just did the hurricane relief for Jamaica in July, sent a bunch of stuff over there. Every time we've done those type of efforts, besides giving my time and my energy, collecting it, I always make the biggest first donation to start it off. But I feel like the random acts of kindness for me personally, time is the biggest commodity that we have. And I feel that like on a regular basis, not, I couldn't say daily or weekly or whatever, but if I encounter somebody that can benefit from my time, I try to give it to them regardless of like the relationship, like regardless of how well I know them. So the most recent act of kindness was yesterday. Some girl in the UK that's trying to be, she had posted that she was going to give up on being a artist in her stories. And I just asked her a bunch of questions as to why. And I gave her 15 different strategies as to how she can keep going.
Mm-hmm. So, love that.
Professional risk taker mentality. Yeah, man. Yeah, I don't like to see people give up on themselves.
100%.
I mean? So like,
applaud that, bro.
Like, so yeah. So that'd probably be my most recent random act of kindness. Been in Norin from old and to grown, boy. Yeah. I just happened to see her in her stories, and I hate when I see people giving up. You know what I mean? I hate that.
I'll say for me, mine is I find that like people that are homeless, or you know what I mean, people always look at them like beneath them or whatever the case is. I always try to, you know, just, hi, how are you? What's your name? Like the other day, a guy sitting outside my restaurant, his name was like Daniel. And I asked him, I was like, what's your name, bud? Can I grab you anything? And he's like, you know that like nobody's asked me my name in how long? So I was like, just doing those kind of little things and treating them like the people that they are.
Humans.
Yeah, right? So I think that like for me, that would be a random kind of, I guess it's not random because it's something that I always try to incorporate into my life when I see where I can help out. But just treating people, everybody as humans as they are.
Steph?
Bro, to be honest, I don't know if I have any. I'm not much of a people person. I'm outside.
I'm just told me you're not kind, bro. So I don't help no one. Scrooge over here, dog.
Yo, you know, do you know what you should do? I'll tell you why, hold on. The reason, like, bro, I got dark tinted windows. I try not to be seen. Like, I don't know. There's something about me that I just try to revert out of people's eyes.
You know what you should do? You cut hair. I don't know how many clients you have a day come in, but your last client, how about you cut them for free?
So, okay, perfect. I actually did that for
you. I was going to say, you're probably overlooking something.
That's what I'm saying. Like, how could you not have?
Yeah, because it's like, it was reciprocated in a sense, right? Where it's like, he's always done something for me. So it's like today, so I guess, yeah, it applies where it's random.
It's random. You don't be doing that all the time.
Yeah, but it's like, I didn't think of that. I was just more like, I'm returning the favor in a sense where it's like, he's a person that always brings a bottle for me at Christmas time, right?
Or like he mentioned, like time is our biggest commodity. What if you like donated your time to teach like a young and up and coming barber how to cut?
Yeah, if I got reached out to that point, for sure.
Yeah. Can they reach out to you?
Yeah, of course. They can reach out to, I'm reachable. I have all my things out there on Instagram or anything like that for you to contact me. But yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, to apply, going back to the story, yeah, guy has given me a bottle for Christmas almost every year that I've been cutting him. So this time around, he said he was going on a trip he was going specifically for the Barris Hammond and Buju show in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. And then was also checking in on vibes. I'm like, you know what? You're about to spend a lot of change and do whatever for Christmas on top of that. So it's like, yo, it cuts on me. So,
Tashaun?
Yeah, I'd say one that just came to my mind. It wasn't super recent, but my cleaning lady, she came over one morning to like clean my place and she was crying. And she was just having some kind of family trouble with something. And usually when she cleans my place, I leave and go do what I have to do. And I remember I was running errands. I think I was getting my hair cut. And then I went and got her flowers. And like, we don't even talk like that. Like, her English is not that great, but like, we're cool. I say, hey, how are you? But like, just to see her like that kind of broke my heart. And I was just like, anything I could do to just give her some kind of light in her day, I was like, I'm going to do it. And I was just like, at first I'm like, is this even appropriate? I don't even know her like that. But I was like, yeah, man.
And it hurts in the right place, though.
Right? And it, she appreciated it. Like, she gave me a big hug. She's like, thank you so much. Like, you don't know. And then even the other day, I seen her. Why I was reminded of it, because she cleaned my place the other day, and she was just like, I still have those flowers you gave me. Thank you so much. Wow. Like, you don't understand how much it meant. And I was like, wow. Just something like that, man. I think it's... Sometimes we overlook our random acts of kindness because it's sometimes it's just part of our character.
Yeah.
But it's like, I think we do acts of kindness all the time. And sometimes when you remember them, it makes you feel good to know that you... Something so small can have such an impact on somebody. So you're buying a drink at a coffee place and you buy the person in front of you. Like little simple things like that is just like just reminding people that our world doesn't have to be so cold, you know? And it doesn't involve sometimes even saying much to somebody, but yo, it's on me, don't worry. Yeah. Or it could be anything. But yeah, man.
I feel like anytime God puts it on your heart to do something like that, do it. Yep. Anytime you have like the thought, like, you know what would be? Do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's what I always tell my girl. I'm always like, yeah, if he places it in my heart, somebody's at my door knocking for change, I'm, yeah, here. I'm going to always do it. No, I'm
never questioning. Yeah, like it's perfect. That's a perfect example because like I often don't give money on the street. But the second someone asks me and I think, maybe I should do it this time, I just push my hand, whatever I have. It's a 20, it's a 5, it's a 10. Whatever I have, or like literally I've sometimes, you know, we're not in a cash society like that anymore. So it's kind of hard, but like, that's, yeah. Like those times, there's a difference between the, I don't know, day of the week, the weather, whatever. There's just sometimes you just feel like I should give, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what
I'm saying? Listening to your guys' stories, I just thought of mine, and like, I have a bunch, cause like, I don't know. I just like giving people stuff. Like if I can help them,
yeah,
I'm going to help them. But the one that like stood out to me the most was when we were in Dominican, and we were ATVing through the neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand what the kids are saying. They're speaking Spanish, right? I understand, but like he pointed down at his feet. He had no shoes on, and he was pointing at my shoes. And I was like, oh, shit. What am I going to wear? But like you said, that quick thought is like, I'm being selfish. What do you mean, what am I going to wear? I have shoes back at the hotel. He's asking for them because he doesn't have them. Has anybody ever asked you for shoes before? So I took them up. I'm a size 12. I can guarantee that kid's not a size 12. Yeah. He's probably like, you know, your shoelace when you squeeze them tight to make them work. So I gave them to him. And then I remember like when we got off the ATV and then like there was rocks and everything and I'm stepping on, I'm like, ah, shit. Like, but this is what he has to step in every day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I get like, that's what stood out to me. So
it's powerful.
Yeah. Like I'm telling you, there's a lot of them, but that one, like, he wanted those shoes, and I was like, who am I not to give him them, right? Like, it's shoes, it's material things, right?
Yeah.
So.
No, I hear you, bro.
You're a good youth.
I try.
I just know what it feels like when someone does something kind for you, even when it's small. So I know it's big. Because even last night, I was at a gala, and I went to coat check, and the lady's like, yeah, so it's $3. And I'm looking like, do you take debit? And she's like, nah. We're just staring at each other. I'm like, so what am I supposed to do? I don't know. I looked at her ass for real, but like, no one carries cash anymore. I was like, you know what? It's all right. She goes, I'm just doing my job. I'm like, you know what? Don't worry. I'll figure something out. And I walked away. Then some next guy came. He goes, bro, let me take your jacket. I'm like, what happened? He goes, well, just, it's on the house. And I'm like, why? He goes, you were just kind about it. Like, few people, I guess the last few people that came were like, what do you mean there's no coach? And I was just like, yo, I'll figure something out. And I just kind of just walked away, you know? I was like, thank you, it's all good. I'm not even mad at you.
Yeah.
And it was just because I wasn't rude and I was actually just kind to the lady.
Yeah, yeah,
they just returned the favor. And it actually felt good because it's like, where was I going to get $3 from? I have to ask people for...
that's crazy.
You got to imagine I was wearing a durag? They were really...
What do you say, Frank?
You know what I'm saying, Frank? Asking him for $3 with a durag on?
At a gala? That's crazy. Wes,
I appreciate you stopping in, brother, and taking the time out and giving us a great testimony onto what risk-taking and setbacks and that kind of mindset is, and then also to highlight whatever you're doing. So in honor of that, do you have anything to promote for yourself coming up?
To be honest,
not really too into what year are we in now? 2025? I'm still kind of in 2024. I haven't really made any significant plans for this year, but we do have the Valentine's Day special that should be coming out as White Yardie's comedy special on YouTube. And we have, hopefully, I'm not speaking prematurely, but Trix should be doing come back to Toronto, do a show on March 23rd. Oh, so bless. Those are the two things that I got going on right now.
Okay, bless.
We can pop up.
Yeah,
I understand.
Love to pop up.
Yeah,
but before
random act of kindness. It's on.
Doc, you did the Caribbean verse.
Yeah, Africa verse.
Yeah, yeah. When I went with Tashawn, and that best comedy show I've been to.
Thank you.
Right, and I've been to probably like 4 or 5, and that was the best one. I actually was laughing up. And then I was kind of upset at Major because he, you know, he pointed me out in the crowd, you know, the rapper thing, you know? So and here's a joke now. Like, I didn't know, like, Cedric, Deshaun's father, and all of them are cool.
Yeah.
So then he's like, yo, you guys come to the back to take a picture. I'm like, oh, okay. So, like, the door opened. Major saw me. He went like, yo, who that guy? You know? But no, it was an amazing show.
Thank you.
You know, all those comedians, every single one of them, like, I got to give them props, right? Because doing that's not easy. And like to have all those people laughing, and like, you know, you always hear whispers, and like when we were staying after, everybody was talking about how amazing it was. So I want to give you your props
on
that.
Thank you.
You know, it was an amazing show.
Comedy has to be relatable, and there's not a lot of Caribbean people doing it. So I try to amplify those that are. So it just services a niche that really like, yeah, okay, the American stuff is funny. Mm-hmm. Went to Mike Epps last night. A lot of the stuff is just not relatable because I'm not from where he's from. You know what I mean? It's still funny to laugh at. Like, ha, 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 I seen what you're talking about in a movie. You know what I mean? Wherever you're from. But the stuff that relates, so you say your mom's Jamaican because you relate to what I'm telling you about her. So when the comedians can come on stage and tell you things that you remember from your childhood, things that you're going through with your family right now, things that happen when you go home or whatever, it's that much funnier.
That's why when I said Team West with your mom, because let me tell you something, his mom's a writer, his mom's his lawyer.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He does no wrong, right? And with my mom, I remember like when I would get in trouble at school, my mom would pull up. And she, I'm going to be honest with you, she would always ask me, did you do it? And I'd be like, she goes, don't lie to me. I was like, yeah. So I'm thinking like, oh, then when I get in there, she's going to be against me. Yeah. She goes, so what did you do to make my son do this? You know what I mean?
100%.
So, like, that's why I always love my mom. But as soon as we left that office, she goes, you know when we get home, I'm like, I'll bust your ass.
Yeah, you knew right away, right?
100%. But she, like you said, she's not in front of anybody telling you my son's wrong.
Nope.
Right? Mom, I killed somebody. Yo, where the shovel them? I don't come help you. I got in jail to get out, you know? That's but honestly, Wes, to be honest, give you your props for those shows. I love them. Appreciate I know the guys, you know, everybody was excited to have you here.
Yeah. So, you guys appreciate you. Really, really appreciate it. Come on, come out to the show.
Of course.
Yeah.
For sure.
Before we take off, I just want to shout out to Archie and Darium. Thank you for feeding the pod today, man. We really appreciated everything.
Bomb! Yeah, that was sick. Though.
Everything was amazing. Thank you guys so much.
So blessed. Thank you guys, really man. Cool.
So again, from us to you guys, please like, comment, and subscribe.
Hit that button, Steph.
That one right there. Yeah, the red button on the screen there says subscribe in the little corners. Yeah, yeah, hit that one. But again, from us to you guys, to the next installment, He's a Guy podcast. Be safe out there.
We out.